Raymond Prosser. Seated next to him is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To my immediate right is Justice William Babbage. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice, and I will meet with you today at noon. To my left is Justice John Wilcox, and to his left, Justice Patrick Brooks, and on the far left, Justice Diane Sykes. With those introductions made, I'll call the second case of our November calendar, which is 01-2217, Mount Horeb Community Alert versus Village Board of Mount Horeb. Representing the Village Board of Mount Horeb is Richard C. And is it Ede? Edie, I'm sorry, I've asked you that several times and then I forget your response, counsel. You may proceed.
My name, as noted, is Richard Edie with the Stafford Rosenbaum Law Firm. With me at counsel table is Angela James. We are representing the Mount Horeb Village Board and are asking the court to reverse the Court of Appeals decision in this case and affirm the denial of mandamus by the trial court. The state legislature has established for villages a representative form of government. And has granted a very limited right of direct initiative. That initiative permitted by the legislature cannot undermine the authority granted to the village board and cannot include the right of referendum or does not include the right of referendum. The ordinance proposed by Community Alert would do both create a referendum contrary to the legislative intent and undermine the authority of the village board. As the creation of the referendum and undermining of authority are the issues I intend to address today. In the Lant and Heider cases, as recognized by this court, the legislature by adopting the initiative procedure that exists today, intentionally withheld the right of referendum. The right of referendum, or the right of initiative, being affirmative action on a new subject, and the right of referendum being the right of the electorate to vote to approve or disapprove, or in the words of Community Alert, to vote up or down on a decision or proposal of the governing body, in this case the village board. The legislative history, as recognized in Land, was that the legislature initially created a right of initiative that did include referendum. That ultimately the Supreme Court held that the right of referendum was unconstitutional as applied to counties. When the legislature then adopted the initiative, right of initiative in its current form, it intentionally deleted the right of referendum, thereby making clear that the right of referendum is not included in the right of initiative granted.
Wednesday of the month, and it's a testing of our emergency system, so that's why you may all sit here safely. otherwise we'd evacuate. You may proceed.
Thank you. As I was saying, the section 9.20 of the statutes under which community alert is proceeding does not include a general right of referendum by initiative. Community alert is attempting to use the initiative to create such a right of referendum when the legislature has intentionally withheld that right. Community alert is asking this court to create new law by expanding the right of initiative to include the right of referendum when the legislature has not seen fit to do so. In fact, that would be contrary to the expressed intent of the legislature. The right of referendum that community alert is attempting to make would, of course, apply to all public works projects in the village of Mount Horeb and would subject those projects and financing of those projects to a referendum contrary to legislative intent.
Councilor, is it your argument that any direct initiative that requires a referendum, regardless of subject matter, regardless of fiscal notes, et cetera, simply cannot be done?
Well, let me make sure I understand the question. Obviously, I think direct legislation can result in a referendum on the direct legislation itself. But it is our position that the direct legislation cannot require a referendum, period, yes.
But why do you have to do it that way? Why can't you just say that, that the next time it's an initiative, too? If they want to engage in an expenditure of $1 million, then you've got to have an initiative by the voters.
And the voters, depending on the particular project, and the stage at which it is, may in fact be able to commence an initiative proceeding. But this legislation, this ordinance, would create an automatic right of a referendum on every decision by the village board, which would result in expenditures of $1 million by the village.
Well, council, simply asking the decision to build something, this apparently has to do with if you're going to build, that clearly would be legislative. Either if you're going to build something for $1 million, we'd like an opportunity to either the board has to act on it or we'd like it submitted to, so that the voters can act on it. Now that seems to be legislative. Is the problem you're having with this one is because of the specific cost or location or things of that nature? Because it would seem that would be the type of thing that direct 920, direct legislation, direct action would be all about.
Well, section 9.20 is about legislative acts. That's correct. But this particular ordinance creates a general right of referendum on any proposed project by the village, any proposed project over a certain size by the village, and which is a referendum on decisions by the village board to go ahead with that kind of project. And it's our position that is not permitted by direct legislation. You can't create by direct legislation the right of referendum when the legislature has intentionally taken away the right of referendum.
Council, did the Court of Appeals deal with this argument?
The Court of Appeals, well, let me say that the Court of Appeals did not directly deal with this argument. The village has consistently argued that you cannot, that this ordinance cannot require a referendum. The argument it was not made exactly this way. The argument has evolved.
Well, that's, however, in the amicus brief.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to clarify that because my understanding is that you're now making that argument so that you don't think further briefing or other comments are necessary. You're making the argument here now.
I am making the argument here now. If the court would like further briefing on that subject, we're more than happy to accommodate
and
that.
I just want to clarify where the argument was made. It was made directly in the the legal defense. I mean, now municipality briefs. And you are now making that argument.
Yes.
But could I ask? Could a village board or city council simply say we're going to pass an ordinance that will require a referendum whenever we spend $1 million for a public works project?
The village board or city council could provide for a referendum in each case, but the village board or city council could not say bind future village boards and city councils by saying that all future decisions will be subject to such a referendum of such a if it's a binding referendum, because that would be delegating the authority that was specifically given to the village board by the legislature.
Well, like, as long as the village board doesn't repeal that ordinance, why can't it agree to it? This is Justice Price's ordinance on providing for referendum. There are many referendum by the communities. There were several on the ballot last night. Yesterday.
That's right. And many of those are required by statute. And the statutes do provide for referenda in specific cases, but the legislature has withdrawn the right to require referenda as a general matter. It's also true that the village board could, I expect, say that we are going to build this project, a particular project, subject to a referendum on this particular project, but which would not be delegating its general authority over making decisions on future projects.
Aren't you speaking for a village? Aren't you, in effect, limiting the home rule powers of municipalities by making this argument?
Well, home rule powers are, of course, limited to some extent by the statutes and Constitution. But I don't think that I'm limiting the home rule, or that the village would be limiting the home rule power of villages by this argument. What we're arguing is that the governing body has to maintain its authority to make decisions in future cases the same way, in the same way that the village board is prohibited from contracting away its legislative authority. Whether it gives it away voluntarily or by contract, it has the same result. It has to maintain that authority and cannot give it away or contract it away.
It would seem to me, though, if you passed an ordinance that required a referendum in certain kinds of public works projects, and then something came along where you said, we don't really want to go to referendum on this one, you just create an exception to the ordinance in the new ordinance in Japan.
I suppose that's possible, but the argument is that the village board shouldn't be required to create an exception to exercise the authority that's been granted to it by the legislature.
Is there any statute that expressly prohibits referendum?
No.
So your argument about referendum and the power of a village would have to rest that it's a non-delegable duty? Pass statutes or pass ordinances in a representative democracy rather than in a pure democracy?
What I'm saying is that the village board can, in any particular case, decide to subject its decision to a referendum, but cannot contract away or delegate away its general authority to legislate or to make decisions of that sort.
So it couldn't say all school construction, I may be in the wrong community, but all school construction has to be approved by the voters. It has to just say each school, when it comes up, has to be approved by the voters.
Yes.
Are we done with this topic?
Okay. Then the brief, as I understood it, and the argument made, as I understood it, by the Court of Appeals, looked to the concept that initiatives are limited under some doctrines that were judicially imposed. Is that right?
That's how the Court of Appeals stated it, yes.
And do you think that they are correct in stating the law? I mean, I know you disagree with them as to how they applied it in this case, but what about the general statement of the legal principles?
The general statement of the legal principles is correct. I would argue that the exceptions are inherent in the legislation rather than judicially created. And the court's decisions, I think, have recognized that. I would also argue that there is one of the problems with the Court of Appeals' decision and with Community Alert's argument is that there's nothing in there that at all limits the use of referenda, that there's no reason that under the Community Alert's argument or the Court of Appeals' reasoning, that initiative could not be applied to every decision of the village board, that every decision of the village board could not be subjected to referendum or the equivalent of a town meeting, thereby converting the village government from a representative democracy to a direct democracy, contrary to the intent of the legislature. That cannot be done by initiative because it is contrary to the intent of the legislature in creating a representative form of government for villages. In the Heider, Denning, and Flottam cases, this court recognized that the authority of the governing body cannot be undermined by direct legislation. The statutes give the village board authority over construction and financing of public works projects. Section 61.34, for example, gives the village board general authority over the property and finances of the village. 61.54 to 56 give the village board authority over construction projects. 67.05 of the statutes gives the village board authority over borrowing. subject to referendum in specified cases. And 66.0701 and 0.03 give the village board authority over special assessments, just as several examples of the authority granted to village boards to govern public works projects and the financing of those projects. Community Alert is attempting to undermine that authority by making the village board decisions subject to referendum. The similar attempts were rejected by this court in Hyder, Flottam, and Denning. Although the Community Alert Initiative would affect the specific statute addressed in Denning in exactly the same way. That statute was then numbered 66.066, is now numbered 66.0621. This court held there that the governing body's exercise of authority under that statute could not be, that a referendum could not be applied to affect the governing body's exercise of authority under that statute. The ordinance, the proposed ordinance in this case, would affect the village board's exercise of authority under that statute in exactly the same way as the proposed ordinance in the Denning case did. The proposed ordinance in this case is not appropriate for direct legislation because it both imposes additional procedural requirements in the form of referendum and usurps the authority of the village board by making ultimate approval of projects and the financing of those projects subject to referendum.
Could the village board pass an ordinance or adopt an ordinance that requires public works projects over $1 million to be submitted to a referendum? I thought I understood you to say earlier that the answer to that question is yes. Or did I misunderstand what you were saying?
What I said was that the village board could subject individual decisions, could decide to subject individual decisions to a referendum, but could not adopt an ordinance that delegated away its general authority to approve public works projects.
The village board could say, for this particular waterworks or whatever, it's going to submit the matter to the voters. This particular works costing, estimated to cost $1 million.
Yes.
We can't say all projects estimated to cost a million will be submitted to the voters. That's your principle.
Correct.
And that's pursuant to what statute or constitutional provision or what case?
It's the principle that the village board cannot delegate its authority to legislate. It cannot bind future boards to give away the authority to make decisions that are granted to the village board by the constitution and statutes of the state.
So that principle is found where?
That principle is found in the
I mean, it sounds good to me, but I don't know where it's coming from.
I guess I would refer you to the amicus brief. I can't think of the site right now. The in conclusion. The proposed ordinance in this case both imposes additional procedural requirements and usurps the authority of the village board, making it inappropriate for direct legislation. The representative form of government established prohibits the problems, or prohibits the referendum as a requirement for decisions. The problems with Community Alert's ordinance such as the lack of an emergency procedure and the inability or at least great difficulty in applying it because of the requirement that it state the specific cost are problems that could have been addressed, could be addressed, if the ordinance went through the ordinary legislative process as required by the statutes, but cannot be addressed in direct legislation because of the requirement that it be submitted unchanged to the voters. Those changes, if subjected to the advice of council and permitted amendments and compromises on that legislation, could be addressed.
So you've cited, I think, something, Magleby on direct legislation and McQuillan Municipal Corporations. Do either of these texts speak specifically to the question of whether a municipality could have an ordinance on referendum or the direct legislation could have a general ordinance on referendum?
McQuillan does address the concepts generally of delegation of municipal authority and whether or not there could be direct legislation on the referendum is subject to state-by-state analysis because different states have different constitutional provisions and different statutory provisions regarding the right of initiative. In some, the initiative is reserved to the people by the Constitution, unlike the state of Wisconsin, where it's a legislative grant only. In summary, the village, again, urges the court to reverse the Court of Appeals and affirm the trial court's denial of mandamus in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Eady. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Of Lawton and Cates, representing Mount Horeb Community Alert et al. Life?
May it please the court, I am attorney Christopher Blythe, law firm Lawton and Cates, representing the plaintiff appellants, Community Alert on Mount Horeb. Almost 2 years ago to this date, a group of citizens in Mount Horeb who were concerned by what they perceived as an unresponsiveness of the local government to citizen input decided that they wanted to do something about it. To their credit, instead of sitting around complaining, they got active and they did two things. One, they got involved and are still very involved in local politics and in recruiting and supporting candidates whom they felt would be more responsive. The other thing they did was they circulated this petition for direct legislation to try and bring a greater level of accountability that they felt was missing. And it just occurred to me last night watching the election results, this is now the third election cycle we've gone through where that proposed, and I emphasize proposed, ordinance still has not been on the ballot in front of the citizens of Mount Horeb. During these last 2 years, while this has been litigated, a number of interesting issues have come up on this, and I think they're, in a lot of ways, very fundamental to the heart of our democratic process. A lot of times the debate almost sounded like we'd turn back the clock 200 years to the Jeffersonians versus the Hamiltonians, with Jeffersonians on our side arguing, no, you should put more power in the hands of the people, and the Hamiltonians arguing for a stronger central form of government and more power in the hands of elected representatives. And I think when you look at interpreting the statute and how it should be applied, you get down to that almost fundamental question in some aspects of how much power do you delegate to the people. In preparing for the hearing today, I was looking back over the brief we submitted this court that I believe we submitted back in July or so. And given what's gone on recently in this building and the politics and all the scandals and charges of corruption, it occurred to me that the Thomas Jefferson quote that we began our brief with was in some ways much more eerily prophetic than we could have even imagined. That quote, saying, "Every government degenerates when trusted to the rulers of the people alone."
Council.
Yes.
I'm going to get right to the heart of my concerns with your position in this case. I start off with the fundamental presumption that we have chosen a representative form of government.
That's correct.
Which is, well, we all know what that means. If this referendum is okay, let me propose another referendum to you, a hypothetical, and ask you whether it's okay. What if the direct action initiated by Community Alert was to provide that every legislative act of the village board must be submitted to the people for approval? Would that be okay?
I guess I'd have to think about that. I'm speaking obviously off the cuff, but
Legislative act of the village board. You're saying this is a legislative act. And it directs itself at the expenditure of $1 million. What if we say this is okay, then Village Alert comes back and says, our Community Alert comes back and proposes to them by way of an ordinance that every legislative act must be submitted to the voters for approval. Is that okay?
Well, I suppose theoretically, you know, the state legislature did delegate this power to the people to propose legislation. If it's used to overturn existing ordinances, then I suppose it would not be appropriate, given the judicial exceptions.
Let's assume that the village board of Mount Horeb designates a certain area within Mount Horeb to be a city park, or designates a certain road to have a speed limit of 20 miles an hour rather than 25 or something. If my hypothetical was proposed to you, they could not adopt that without first submitting it to a referendum.
That would be correct.
And that would be okay?
Well, I suppose that's if that's a power that's within the power of the village board to do itself, this court in Althaus said that the electors can propose anything that's within the power of the village itself to do. And if the village itself could do that, then yes, arguably that would be permissible under this court's holding in Althaus.
And why is that not if that's okay then, why is that not doing by indirection what I think we would all concede we cannot do by direction, which is to do away with representative form of government?
Well, I don't know that you've gotten rid of representative government. You'd still have your elected representatives who would be proposing that legislation and would be passing that, so I don't know that eliminates it.
Well, if they didn't act on it, just following up, then of course it would be then submitted to the electorate. I think the difficulty that Justice Babich raises with this is obviously hypothetical and goes a bit beyond what your clients are asking here, but I have a question. Justice Babich, the ordinance just talks about spending decisions, and here it's $1 million, and perhaps that's a legislative consideration. But then it says, and I think this is one of the arguments, that if you're going to spend $1 million, we want to know where you're going to do it and the purpose of it. And these are decisions, I want to talk about administrative decisions that may be controlled. And in the amicus, in the brief in chief, it talks about dealing with water towers or dealing with public buildings where you may have a planning commission involved or a library cited, and you have all of these so-called administrative decisions that are intermingled into this. Now, that's an objection from opposing counsel as to how you would apply this initiative or direct legislation under 920. And I believe that that is the concern that's about this particular proposed ordinance, is the administrative decisions that have to key into this and how that would be handled other than by the village board or the municipal board itself under some representative form of government. In other words, you could kill, if you're looking at this solely to say, look, we don't have the money, we've got a spendthrift board, we want control over this, we want them to know that we have 920, if you just limited the ordinance to that, but Justice Pavlich or perhaps myself are supposing that you can go far afield with this, and that is what the concern is.
What?
And takes it out of the hands of the representatives that have been elected to do the job in the village.
I understand that obviously past court holdings have determined that if the proposal is administrative as opposed to legislative in nature, then it's not appropriate. And I know counsel has argued, but I think what counsel argument does, I think it stretches that exception to the point where, you know, this proposal by Community Alert only gives an up or down vote on whether or not to build the project. It doesn't deal with the administrative details. To argue, as opposing counsel has,
I don't want to just. Okay. Well, it doesn't. Well, what is the? It shall provide this. I'm reading from the proposed ordinance. It says, failure of the binding referendum shall preclude the village from proceeding with the project. Then the wording of any referendum shall provide the specific purpose, location, and cost. And that's what I was talking about.
Right.
The administrative decisions that go into where you put the local water tower or where you put the local library, and they have to deal with administrative agencies, building things of that nature. That's because that is what I think that I'm talking about.
I understand it, but I think if you start to go there, if you start to say that any legislation that has an effect on administrative decisions, I can't think of a piece of legislation that wouldn't have an effect on administrative matters anywhere. And in that case, you've nullified the statute.
Right, and I agree with that. Portion of you, but I'm just talking about the ordinances before us today.
The referendum would list those matters, but there would, and I think the ordinance specifically states it's not intruding on the planning as to, you know, how that proposal is developed. It's just an up or down vote on the proposal.
What about emergencies? There doesn't seem to be any exception in this ordinance for emergencies.
There is not in the language of the ordinance. I guess I would.
Is that just simply a political argument against it, or is that legal?
I mean, it might be inconvenient, but I don't know that inconvenience is a legal basis for rejecting a statutory right. There might be inconveniences. I mean, I understand fully why the municipality doesn't want this to pass. You know, they see, you know, inconveniences it would create for them in certain situations. But again, they're free to argue that this hasn't passed. If it goes on the ballot, they're free to argue that to the public and say, we don't think this is a good idea for these reasons. And I assume they would argue that vigorously, and maybe, you know, if they prevail, then it's defeated. But I don't, that's, as you suggest, I think that's more a political argument against people to vote for this, then I think it's a legal reason that it's invalid somehow.
Justice Wilcox asked you about the sentence of specific purpose, location, and cost of the project in the proposed ordinance. How do those requirements differ, if at all, from the referenda questions on schools or other things that are authorized by the statute?
I have to admit I'm not an expert on school referenda, but it's my understanding that would be fairly similar.
Would this, just looking at the question of emergency, so if the village hall burns down, or the water tower tips over, or the public library is gone, as I see this, before any of these things could be replaced, if this ordinance, then you'd have to have a referendum, or the village would have to deal with it in that manner, which is what we're talking about, the right of the citizen, the direct legislation, which Justice Babbage is referring to. And that it seems to fly in the face of what we're talking about when we talk about a representative government. So are you saying that this decision is let's say, yes, the village board's involved, but the people are more involved in each action involving $1 million should be submitted?
Yeah, and again, like I say,
We're not just looking at Mount Horeb. We're trying to think how this is going to affect municipalities around the state. And obviously, that's why the amicus is here, and they're raising some of these questions, which we're referring to.
Certainly.
Now, let's talk about representative government. I assume that the concept of representative government and the powers delegated to the state legislature and the local legislatures come at least from Article 4, Section 1, that the people have delegated lawmaking powers to the legislature.
Right.
Now, the state, though, can pass laws, apparently, that say that a local government entity must seek the approval of the people. Right. And it limits that, usually, to particular kinds of programs, like 67.056A. It says school districts, if they want to borrow or to finance school building construction, must submit it to a referendum if the project exceeds specified amounts or bonding is required. Right? So the state can say the people decide, at least on certain issues.
Correct.
And that's valid.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can do a little delegation, but maybe the state can't just say delegate everything to the people and bypass.
Well, they
maybe.
But by enacting 9.20, they did delegate a lot of authority to the people.
And that, it seems to me, is the response you have to keep making, is that this is a limited initiative. It doesn't say everything from one buck up has to go to the people.
That's correct.
So it's carved out a small amount of power, and the small amount, you say, is valid under 4.1 and other appropriate statutes.
Yeah, I guess we could argue about whether other hypothetical proposals would be valid. I guess our feeling is the one that we have submitted is.
But your legal analysis applies, it appears to me, whether it's a $1 million limitation or a $100 limitation.
Well, I think it applies if it's a legislative decision, legislative-type decision.
I mean, your argument would be the same here. Your brief would be the same if the number were different.
If what you're talking about giving approval to voters of is a legislative decision, that's correct. But, sometimes expenditure decisions are administrative decisions, if that. So, I don't, I think to extend it to say that every single dollar spent anywhere, anytime by any municipality or agency thereof, you know, then, you know, if it were that broad, then I think you do get into probably talking about administrative matters. But any legislative decision, and again, I guess, you know, the court says anything the village itself could do, any power, legislative power it has, that the voters, the court in Aldhouse said that the voters could propose anything that the village itself could enact.
About tax rate?
Pardon me?
About a tax rate. Could you have a referendum on a tax rate?
If a local, I mean, I'd have to look at the tax statute. I don't know if a referendum that would conflict with the way the tax laws, I'm not a tax lawyer, so I can't tell you whether the way a local property tax is set, for example. I don't know the state laws on that. But if it's a matter that's within the authority of the local government, then that's something, according to this court in Aldhouse, that that could be the appropriate subject of direct legislation. Again, as long as it doesn't conflict with some state procedure that there might be, that I, you know, and I don't know about that, as far as statute and tax rates. I would also point out section 5.01 of the statutes in terms of interpreting all this does direct us that chapters 5 to 12 are to be construed to give effect to the will of the electors. Going to the exceptions, the Court of Appeals, I think, provided the correct analysis as to these judicially created exceptions that have been developed over the years. I think the proposal is, as we've talked about, legislative, not administrative. And I think the proposed expansion of that, as advocated by the village board, would render the statute almost meaningless. I think the proposal is clearly within the village's authority. And I think, as the Court of Appeals noted, that it does not modify existing statutory procedures.
Counsel, why isn't the reference to purpose and location in the proposed ordinance specifically location? Why isn't that more make this arguably legislative action blend into administrative and take on character of administrative? Isn't deciding where something is going to be built more administrative? I mean, what I can think of the myriad of considerations that a person or entity charged with deciding what site is appropriate has to consider.
Slopes, you know, I think whether or not to build is clearly legislative. Whether you have brass or silver doorknobs, you know, if you get down to that level of detail, you're probably at an administrative level. But, you know, the main decisions, do we build it, how much do we spend, and where do we put it, I think those are legislative decisions. But again, you're not telling them what that has to be within the proposal. It's just, it's an up or down vote on whether to proceed. And I think, you know, if you get back to that, that's still clearly a legislative decision.
It's an up or down vote, and I need help with this. It's an up or down vote on how to proceed after the electorate has been informed, pursuant to this ordinance, mm-hmm. of the purpose and location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, presumably, I guess a sample one, the city will build a new city building, downtown for $2.3 million. And the citizens vote up or down on that. I think whether or not to approve that proposal is a legislative decision.
I'm just interested in your example on page 12 of your briefs that related to the Madison swimming pool issue. Now, had Have the Common Council here already proposed the swimming pools?
I believe in that case.
Pardon me?
I'm just looking quickly, I'm sorry.
It says it's a recent example. This is, comes from the LRB
right.
document, which I have. It says that it's an indirect initiative, but it says it was a charter ordinance initiative.
Right.
Relating to public
right.
works.
That's correct. Yeah, that was not initiated under Section 9.20, but I was using it as an analogy that that's a type of, and the LRB used it as an example that way. So.
All right.
Just a question, Council, because the a lot of times, and I'm thinking of the, if we were to accept your position and say this is a proper way to handle 920, how would you have us deal with emergencies? This question has been asked. You said, "Well, we're not," but that does come up. And I mean, I was thinking of I think it was Hayward, Wisconsin, where there was devastation. And let's say they had this ordinance, and someone's, what would this do? Would you be able to act without having this court vote of the people? Would the village board, or I don't even know if they're a village up there, but I'm just thinking of, would you ask us to exempt emergencies would not apply under this?
Well, I mean, that's clearly your prerogative if you'd like to do that. I think that, I guess as a practical matter, again, I don't know that it would be as burdensome a procedure as opposing counsel might have lead us believe. If you had something like that, I think, you know, you're going to have to come up with some kind of proposals to rebuild fairly quickly, and I don't know why you couldn't very quickly have that referendum if as a practical matter, I'm sure a lot of municipalities would go ahead anyway. And I, you know, as a practical matter, probably nobody would object at that point. But even if they did, I don't think it's necessarily overly burdensome to hold a, you know, to print some quick ballots and hold a referendum if that's the concern. I guess the one other issue I just would like to address, is that we did address in our brief as well, is kind of this whole procedural issue whereby the decisions as to whether or not a proposal is appropriate for direct legislation have more or less been handed over to village boards, and we have great concerns about that. The whole idea of this statute being, if you don't feel the village board is being responsive, then you've got this other procedure, and you give it to them, and the statute says they shall either pass it or put it on the ballot. Well, the way the law is developed and the way in practice, and it's what happened here, the village board said, no, we're not going to do either. And they didn't even give a reason. They didn't even cite in their motion that they adopted one of the four exceptions, or any of them, for that matter. They just said, no, we're not going to. And I think the whole burden has been turned on its head. I think at a minimum, at least, I think a procedure should be established whereby if they feel a proposal is inappropriate, I think the burden should be on the village board to go to a court and say, statute says shall, but we think this exception applies. And I think, you know, that's, at least then you have a judge, a judicial body making that determination of law, and you at least have a reason, and you have some analysis as to why it was rejected. As what happened here, they just said, no, we're not going to do it. And like I say, I mean, there's nothing to stop any village board or city council in the state from doing that every single time they're presented with one of these. And then the petitioners have to run to court and try and enforce their statutory right. And as I said, I may not agree with all the exceptions that have been created by the judiciary, but I acknowledge that they're there and they have to be dealt with. But I think as to whether or not they apply should be up to the judiciary, not up to the village board, the very council that the statute is giving the citizens the right to bypass.
Why do you agree with these exceptions? Statute is simple, doesn't have any exceptions, it says shall.
I didn't say agree, I said I acknowledge they exist. I'm not sure I agree with him. I think when a statute says shall, it should mean shall. I think if you go to the plain meaning tenet, which is one of the most fundamental tenets of statutory construction, I think shall. And I think if it says it shall be on the ballot or passed, I think it should be. And it goes on the ballot, and the people can vote it up or down. And if it passes and somebody thinks it's invalid or unconstitutional, they can challenge it once it becomes a law.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we don't go to the legislature and say, hey, this bill you're proposing, it's invalid. You can't vote on it. You know, the legislature votes on it. And I know there's some of the members here have been in the legislature. I'm sure you've seen goofy proposals come through the legislature. But that doesn't mean you don't get to vote on it, and that the legislature has a prerogative to pass that if they want.
So do you think we have to overturn all those cases that deal with all these exceptions?
Well, I think for purpose of our case, I don't think you have to. I certainly believe it would be appropriate, and it'll get back to the spirit and the plain meaning of the statute. I mean, I was thinking about that. I don't know how the legislature could have made it more specific. You know, if they wanted to word it to exempt or to not have these exemptions, what do? You say, well, we said shall. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's already theirs.
Well, according to that interpretation, though, counsel, an item of direct legislation would have to be submitted to a vote, even if it contravened a statute or the Constitution, and the legislature can't possibly have intended that, can it?
I understand that argument, but I think the determination of whether it does contravene a statute is appropriately made. I don't think you should have prior restraint to that. And again, I know this doesn't go directly to the issue before us on it's a more broad analysis, but I think, you know, traditionally in this society, we analyze laws once they're laws. I mean, that's always been the governmental process, not to analyze them or reject them when they're proposals.
So you're arguing for judicial economy. I mean, why fight about this? Because Mount Horeb citizens might not ever pass it. So put it up for a vote. That's sort of inexpensive. You put it on the ballot, right?
It might have not passed a year and a half ago.
Won't it wouldn't pass. If it doesn't pass, then the court never has to deal with it. And it's finished. If it does pass, which is the way it's handled in many states, then you deal with it then. If it's not constitutional or it violates a statute or it wasn't done properly.
Well, that's exactly, the Althaus case dealt precisely with that. It said it's not appropriate. Now, that was on constitutional issues, not other issues of validity. But the Althaus case dealt precisely with that. It said it's not appropriate for either city council or even the circuit court at that point, when it's a proposal, to judge the constitutionality of that, the proposal in that particular case. And I think, you know, by analogy, that should be applied as well, extended as well to other proposals.
Seems to me, counsel, there have to be some common sense exceptions. Otherwise, you would have the direct legislation potentially breaching contracts, empowering a really small minority from to in effect repeal ordinances that have been passed through a checks and balance process.
Well, you'd need a majority vote, though, on the ballot.
But doesn't the law provide that? You either go to referendum or you just enact it.
Well, the village board could enact it, yes. But they could do that anyway.
Suppose a majority of the village board doesn't want to go to referendum. They just enact or refuse to send it to referendum, mm-hmm. And then the inaction results in that being an ordinance, doesn't it?
Well, No. The statute says they shall either enact it or submit it to the voters at the next referendum, at the next election.
Okay.
They have to affirmatively enact it, yes. Right. Yes, it doesn't automatically become if they do neither. So. But again, I guess I would just say, at a minimum, I think the procedure needs to be looked at in terms of, you know, who has a burden and...
talking about the burden of going to court.
Of going to court, of it, yeah.
The burden of proof in
right,
court.
Okay. Right, right. Who has the burden of going to court and also, obviously, who has the authority to make that judicial analysis of the validity of the proposal. I see my lights on. I don't know.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blythe.
Thank you.
Mr. Eady, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. The first of all, to address Justice Sykes' question that I didn't answer adequately before, the issue is addressed at pages 13 to 17 of the amicus brief, in which the subject of surrender of village board powers and authorities is addressed, and I won't repeat that here. I think it's adequately explained there. But whether or not the village board can, in fact, delegate its authority, the cases do not permit initiative to create a power of referendum. The Mr. Blythe's argument about the shall language assumes that the electorate is acting within its authority. The exceptions to that authority have already been enunciated by this court on numerous occasions and are in fact indicative of the legislative intent, since these cases have been there are numerous cases over many years, and the court has not seen fit to take any action to overrule those cases.
Could you discuss the relationship between the referenda suggested in this ordinance and the school district referenda we see all the time in terms of details or procedure or anything?
The primary difference is that the referenda for school district expenditures are required by state statute. Those are referenda that the state legislature has created and required, as opposed to the kind of referendum in this case where the legislature has indicated that this kind of referendum cannot be created by direct legislation. As far as procedurally and substantively, those referenda simply state generally whether or not the school district will be empowered to spend X number of dollars for certain construction projects. Looking at it as a practical matter, those referenda occur before the school district does final design, letting of contracts, and so on, because that's the only practical way to implement construction projects, is to have the authority to spend the money first and then do the final design and so on. If you have to do the final design and let the bids and so on and then get authority for construction, it just can't work as a practical matter.
Well, couldn't they have reworded this ordinance a little differently that it would pass muster? I think if they had left out, I mean, this is your thought, that if they left out some of the fine-tuning purpose location, would have made a difference? Or you're saying not at all?
What I'm saying is that it wouldn't have failed some of the tests. I think it still fails the test in that it creates a referendum that's not permitted by the statutes. But because it includes that language, it's impossible to apply and fails other tests. the unresponsiveness of elected representatives degenerating when trusted to the rulers alone, quote cited by Mr. Blythe, of course, is not relevant here because the elected the authority of the representatives, the authority is not entrusted to them alone. They're up for their actions are up for review every 2 years under the statutes when the voters have a chance to determine whether or not they think the elected representatives are being responsive or not. And that, of course, is what the legislature had in mind when creating a representative form of government for the village. And finally, I would note that Mr. Blythe's suggestion that as a practical matter, the village could simply ignore one of its ordinances, I submit that that also is not good government.
Thank you, Mr. Eady, and thank you, Mr. Blythe. Am I correct that this is the first oral argument for each of you?
Yes.
Well, we want to congratulate you. Thank you.